freaking burger lunch joints and radio. Fast food places and, you know, make your own lunch, meal prep.
Well, one of the problems is a lot of restaurants give free food, especially down this way to the office.
They do that here too, or at least a discounted grade, but it's easy. I mean, because you're running and gunning and you're going from call to call and you just got to grab something to eat real quick. You know, we're teaching them how to put package stuff in the cars and
maybe hey, the whole
new advantage or wellness program. So, but we're going to see how to see that.
But see, there's kind of the opposite here because where the most hot districts are don't really have their food districts. So, our guys are tied, to their districts a lot of times. So, and again,
they doesn't get nothing for them. Yeah.
And, a lot of times when you work midnight shifts like I did, your shift is a food desert. Because when you come out at 9, at night, you're running calls. And by the time you get to where you got a minute, you got all the afternoon shift calls that they couldn't catch up on because they're busy. By the time you get to where you say, okay, I got to get something to eat because I went to sleep and didn't get nothing to eat before I went to work, by the time you get around to that, it's 2 in the morning. Well, guess what? Now the bars are shutting down. So now you're running calls again. What's up, Mar? It's and that's the reality. These are things community doesn't know, and they get to hear us talk and talk about these things. Sometimes officers, you can be on a 10-hour shift. And you're lucky. Your dinner is a bag of chips and a bag of Doritos and a Coke.
Don't forget the issue of eating cars too. We had guys that were, when we first got the computers in cars, we had people using the computers for coffee cake.
And Joe, but
coffee spills over to the computer. You can zap it, a $30,000 computer.
Right, but we all know that the car is the absolute nastiest place you could ever eat. Let's be honest about that.
We're at the point now. We're training our personnel and our officers to eat and activity level of actual athletes. Like, you see people, the CrossFitters going to the gym and how they're packing their meals and they're doing all this stuff. This is what we're teaching law enforcement. And it's because of that stress level, the adrenaline spikes, the craziness. I mean, on average, police officers live 25 years less than anybody else in the population because of the adrenaline spikes.
And the actuarial notes say that most police can die within 3 years of retirement.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So we're trying to figure out how to both mental and physical prolong lives of our personnel.
Andy with the milk.
It's not milk.
Vodka.
So
that's how I start my day.
Why don't we start the show off talking about this topic? Because it's a lot of great information here coming up. One of the things I'm willing to bet that why most restaurants give free food and half price is because they know that when they're working, that you guys will get there a lot quicker when their name pop up.
That's part of it. That and have an officer sit inside your establishment with the squad car parked outside, and it's a sense of security. And then the other part of it is people actually they're actually still people that like the police. They just want to give a discount. So, I mean, there's methods to the madness. And then that gets into, and that's a whole other show about the ethics portion of it.
Yeah.
And so we start talking about the ethics portion about is that okay for an officer in uniform to accept a gratuity of a half price meal? You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Come on,
let's do this because I don't know what Blog Talk is doing. They're showing me 1:55 until we go on, and here we are. We're here, so we're going to go on and just get into it. And let Blog Talk catch up with us. We're not going to catch up with Blog Talk. And I want to say to everybody, good morning. And we are copyright free. we're not throwing anything in for anybody. I'm not feeling the best this morning, but I'm here. So if y'all see me grimace when I move, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's all right. What I want to do this morning is we cover a myriad of topics here. We go in on some hard stuff. We give you guys a lot of knowledge and things that are going on with policing that you didn't know. And if the officers know, it's true. And city council people and city government say, well, I didn't know. Oh, bullshit, you knew. And caveat is you will hear colorful metaphors. You'll hear a lot of stuff that'll come out here, but it's all true. But what I wanted to do is we all know the problems. We don't want to have a B session on here. But we do want to talk about why we, as America, we never seem to get to the issue. And is that because our leaders, you know, maybe some of us are just a little bit too black. Yeah, I said it. Get your feelings hurt, tune away. That's fine. I don't operate on lights and flares. Maybe some of us are too Republican. Maybe some of us are too Democrat. Maybe a hell of a lot of us are too Christian to where we see an event, we see a problem, we see something that directly impacts us as an individual. But before we open our mouth, because we're scared to speak up as an individual affected by the crisis, what will my Christian friends think? What will my political party think? What will my, whether you're a police officer, a teacher, a firefighter, whatever, what will they think? What will my Republicans think? What will my Democrats think? And I had the esteemed honor of Valerie Denise Jones, who hosts the Judge Joe Brown show. She invited me, and the judge couldn't be there, so she asked me what I fill in. And I filled in for the show 2 weeks ago. And she moderated the show, but I listened. And I listened to all the discussion going back and forth across the whole show platform. And in listening to it, I asked a question at 1 hour and 15 minutes into this show. I said, I want to ask a simple question. I do not want to the Reverend, no disrespect, Christians, don't get your feelings hurt. If you do, you know where to find me. I'm ready for you. The question came, can you answer what I'm going to give you without going to 2 Timothy, the book of Revelations, go back to Job. I don't want to hear all that. I don't want to hear it. Well, you know, black people, I don't want to hear it. Well, the Republican, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, I don't want to hear it. Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, I do not want to hear it. I want to hear from these people on this panel on this question that I posed, how you feel, not Nancy Pelosi, not Donald Trump, not your preacher, not all these people who think like you and applaud in your corner. When you get into your quiet place, away from all of that noise and nonsense, what do you in your heart know to be true? And the question was, and I'm not posing this question, it's just the topic we're going to go on. How did you feel about the treatment of the Haitian people in Texas? I don't care whether they're there legally, they're there illegally. That's irrelevant. It does not matter to me. The response. You as an individual, not your department, not your political party, not your religion, not your social status. And I think, and the board is open today. We're going to talk about a lot of shit today. And for those of you who are tuning in, I'm sorry I didn't warn you. You will hear colorful metaphors. I'll use them. Joe will damn sure use them. And so this show is not, we are different. And I'm going to say this to the haters before I shut up. And I'll be quiet for a lot of this show. Not feeling too good today, but, you know, this show, I want to hear from you all, not us. Every time there's a town hall, the microphone never goes to the back of the room. It never goes to the people most impacted by the problem. It starts with the power players. It starts with the chiefs, the city managers, the mayors, the country club people, the political parties. I'm going to leave with this, and Joe, you moderate a lot for me today, but I'm going to leave with this. About 10 minutes before I came on the show, Erica Reyes Rusks on my Facebook, she posted a video with her daughter. And I looked at this grown woman, this mother, with her daughter. And I got to go back to when she was in middle school. Insecure, didn't know which way to go. And I'm working a part-time job. We were school resource officers for part-time at that point. And I met her and her mother. And I was fortunate enough to be able to, I couldn't make the ends meet, but I could tie them a little closer together. And I look at her today, Baylor graduate, with her daughter, celebrate. So no matter how you approach the fight, white, black, Christian, Democrat, Republican, at the end of it all, what difference did you make? And with that, Joe, lead in, introduce everybody, and I'll let you hold it for a minute.
To tell you the truth, I don't know how I can follow that up. To be quite honest, that's a more than mouthful. Aside from that, everybody introduce yourself, let's go. Don't everybody speak at one time.
Well, you're supposed to go in a direction.
Here's the direction. You got it.
Good morning, everybody. Jim Devlin. Are we actually introducing ourselves? No, I'm Jim Devlin. Eddie, I'll pick you next.
Morning, everybody. I'm Isidore Rodriguez. I'm here, ready to talk about everything. I will say one thing about the Haiti thing that everybody talks about, or not a lot of people talk about. Those people were crossing that border to apply for asylum, which is a legal, completely legal action. And there's about, I don't know, something like there are thousands of Canadians and people from a lot of fairly white countries that are doing that now and every day that aren't getting the response that they got. Like the Canadian border is not being flushed with men on horseback with whips grabbing people and stuff like that. That's just one little point to make there.
All right, come on, Claire.
Hey, I'm Claire. I'm a college student, former police officer at Waco, and excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about whatever we got going on today.
Big John.
Thank you. This is I'm John. I'm excited to be here. I'm waiting to hear some great information from my co-host, and let's get started. So, hold on, Stan, did you introduce yourself?
Oh, they know who I am. Trust me. Trust me.
Stan, the world is a little different than you, Stan. There's people that need to know who you are. So I'm going to pass the mic to Stan.
You know, I'm Stan Mason. I was a police officer in Waco, Texas for 25 years. I had a lot of good teachers and people that taught me, including some rookies who I was training. I lived in the hood I policed, and I started in 1993. I watched the evolution or the non-evolution of policing. I watched the victimization of not just black people, but poor people for the purpose of grants and marketing and boosting whoever was in charge, boosting their career. I went home and would sit on my front porch and drink a beer with the crack addict, who was a suspicious person on somebody's call the day before, but they knew Stan. I was really blessed. I'm not the smartest person in the world, but the drug dealers that were there in that neighborhood protected me. They knew I was coming for them when they messed up. But they respected that I did the job fair. So when Philando Castillo and Alton Sterling were killed about 6-7 years ago now, I came home and took my uniform off. I had never done a Facebook Live, but I thought to myself, who's going to say something? We don't need to hear from Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton has never worked a police call. You know, we don't need to hear from another police chief because they're not working police calls either. And I remember holding my phone, this phone right here, in my hand, in my house in Waco. I've never done a Facebook Live. I knew what I wanted to say. I didn't know how I wanted to say it. But the one certainty I did know is that when I say it, my life is going to change, and it ain't going to be for the good. You know, everything I'd done there was going to go away. And I thought to myself, I said, you know, what should I do, God? And he said, you're at the crossroads. All your accolades, all your attaboys, everything you've done is on this moment. You push this live button. Life as you know it will never be the same. And that's not a good thing. You're going to suffer. You're going to go through some things. People that you thought were friends are going to run. But when you walk out that door, why do you go home? Stan didn't go home because of the SWAT team in Waco. I didn't go home because my partners were Johnny on the spot with vest and whistle tactically sound. I went home because the community let me go home. And this was the same community, not just in Waco, but throughout the country, that for me, when I take that uniform off and nobody knows Officer Mason, they saw this. I'm no better than the least. I'm not getting that consideration. And I pushed the play button, and yeah, my life did change, and yeah, it was hard, and yeah, I went through a lot of things. And sometimes I say to myself, you know, not here recently, but when I would be working, why am I doing this? Why do I keep doing the weekly Facebook Live, teaching probable cause, reasonable suspicion? Why do I do it? Because somebody's mother is going to lose her son. Not because he didn't know, but because he didn't hear from somebody he trusts. And that's why we do this show. That's in a nutshell. You know, John, you put me on the spot. I don't like talking about me, but that's who I am.
People need to know that, though, Stan. The people want to know, need to know what drives you, what drives the show. And I think that you eloquently put it out there. There's a lot of people doing shows, but they're not doing a show like this. So it's necessary for them to get to know the person behind the board.
But, John, you know, but bro, when we do these shows, I understand we're going to talk about the daily divisions. There are black people who love me when I speak up for black things. But when they're disturbed by my approach to the issue, they become quiet. There are officers in this country and departments that can't stand me. I'm divisive. He's off the chain. But there are other officers in there who silently listen. Not to me, but to you. You ran a criminal empire. John, you were a kingpin. Izzy listens to everybody's story and writes documents and investigated journalists. I'm lucky if I can put a sentence together sometime. We got a chief of police on here right now who, for his courage, which I admire and I respect, let's just be real about it. He pissed off the wrong people. His ass is on the line. But he's here every week. Why? The mission, the goal. It's not a Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter struggle. It's not a Republican-Democrat struggle. It's not a Christian-Muslim-Jew-Atheist struggle. It's a human rights issue. And our number is 646-716-4621. You don't have to agree with Stan, Claire, anybody on here. You can call here. Oh, y'all don't understand about police shootings. You don't know what officers go through. I got a young girl sitting up in the corner right there, my baby, who straight out the academy was in one. This show is here for the real moment. We're not here for likes and clicks. We pay for everything. I don't care if I end this show with 5 likes and 2 shares. We don't care. Because we'll be here next week. You know, I'm going to get off my platform, John, but I appreciate that, brother, but, you know.
Stan, can I say something? Because you asked the question, said, how did you feel when seeing what took place with the Haitians? And for the most part, among the black community, you don't feel... really hear too much noise about anything because there's a disconnect. And I'm going to say this. A lot of African-Americans, whatever they want to call themselves, black, there's a disconnect from Africa. There's a disconnect from Jamaica. There's a disconnect from Haiti. Other groups of people, race of people, if something happened in Ireland, and if you're Irish, you relate, you connect. If something happens, even in Puerto Rico, anybody that's Puerto Rican, they know they got family. There's a great divide. And it's not just race. You can look at it from a religious perspective, right? Something happened to innocent Muslims, or Jews, or Christians, other groups are not so much concerned. So I question, what is the real American love here? Which is the real American, come on, Joe, help me up. Izzy?
I'm just thinking it's you're like dehumanizing people. You're taking everything... You're stripping the person of absolutely everything and just hating the fact that they're a human being. Like, you don't even recognize them as a human being anymore. You just see the color of the whatever bias that is, that invisible bias that keeps you from caring about a human life.
And that's the thing, Claire. There's a great divide. And religion has played a part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Politics has played a part in it. And race has played a part in it. And I guess you can even say maybe the economics. There's just a divide where the rich don't really care about the poor people because if they really did, would there really be poor people out there starving, sleeping in the cold? So I'm speaking directly like, you know, you go talk to some of these guys out here, and yeah, man, I ain't been following that, man. You know, my people ain't from there. Okay, where are your people from? You can't even tell me whether your people from Ghana, Nigeria, Sudan. You can't even, okay, you know, you're not even concerned with Africa when something happens over there in Africa. So how do we connect all these dots that we have?
Let me ask you this, John. How do we... as Americans, I don't care if they're black or white or rich or poor or whatever. How do we as as Americans, connect with ourselves. When you turn off your phone and you turn off your TV and you soak in everything you've seen and watched all day long, away from your pastor or your congressman, senator, mayor, city council person, chief of police, your beat partners, your best friend, your homie, how do you go into your quiet place and look at what you know in here? Not them, in here. How do you still walk away from that and say, I'm not going to say anything? John, you and I have disagreed. Joe, Izzy, Chief, Claire, we've all disagreed. Not arguments, we disagree on something. But in our disagreement, we learn from each other, which educates me to how you think, which opens up, which transforms an argument, because we all come, let's be honest. This folks may call here today, they want to win the argument. We're not arguing. How do we transform the argument to a conversation where everybody's point means something? We did a show 2 years ago with the Texas president of the Proud Boys. 2 hours. Most of these folks that are listening to this didn't even know who the hell the Proud Boys were till after January 6th. Knowledge, power, understanding and listening to the other side is power. If I see the north side of the mountain and the chief sees the east side of the mountain, it's a mountain. We just have two different views. His view isn't wrong and neither is mine. So you know what, Chief? I'll tell you something. Let's climb that mountain together and look at it from each other's perspective.
That's what I was going to say. That's the problem, because I just don't think that there is that knowledge. There's no willingness to step forward because you're afraid that you're just going to get knocked down by the other side. If you believe that the west side of the mountain is the best, and I believe the east side of the mountain is the best, we're never going to come together and see that, because I just hate you. And I'm going to come up and say east side's the best. You're going to come up and say west side's the best. And it's not going to make any bit of difference, because we're not going to see each other's side. And we're afraid. I think people are afraid to step forward and say anything at all for fear that they're going to get cancel culture or whatever all this extra other stuff is. Go ahead, Chief.
Yeah, I was going to say, Stan, it's exactly what you said. We're conditioned every day to not do that, to hear the other side of the argument. I'm going to go back to my emotional intelligence and bring that back up, and having high levels of emotional intelligence to be able to handle those type of situations and being in those different cultures and listening to those other ideas and forming an opinion. The way that I look at it is you can think whatever it is you want to think. As long as it's not illegal, immoral, or unethical, then we're okay. It becomes a difference of opinion between you and whoever else, you and I, okay? But you always have the opportunity to learn from somebody. And if you're not doing that every day, if you're not going out and trying to learn from somebody who doesn't look like you, then you're missing the point. Everything has just become so impersonal in this world. We don't know the people that live next door to us or in the apartment above us. We don't know anybody. We only know what's in our surroundings, and we keep our blinders on, right? And we don't pay attention. It's got to go back to what you said, Stan, about drinking the beer of the crackhead on your front porch. Well, who else would have done that? I mean, I would have if crackhead lived next door. I mean, I'd have a beer with them. But, you don't take that opportunity to understand and listen. And, to Don's point, when we start talking about those differences and, the rich and the poor, I'm going to throw political in there. I think there's an opportunity, and we'll just take the homeless and hungry.
Mm-hmm.
There's a route and an opportunity to fix that. Why is it not fixed? It's not going to be overnight, but there sure as hell could be a plan put into place, and that's a multifaceted area with mental health and, you know, whatever else may be going on with the homeless that are out there. But there's a way you can get that done. Why doesn't it get done?
You know, Chief,
that's a lot of problems, but again, it's because we want to stay in our own little world, and in the brain, and I'm just going to throw in some, I'm not a scientist, folks, I'm just going to put this out there, but at least in my training, when we start talking about human performance, we start talking about use of force incidences and things that like that, and even active shooter, one of the things that comes up in the active shooter training is we as humans like to compartmentalize our things into nice, neat little packages that our brain is comfortable with and will understand.
Mm-hmm.
I use this example of, again, this goes off the topic, but to make my point just on that, if you're in an office environment and your pops go off, what do most people usually tell you they thought was happening? Well, I thought somebody was shooting fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
But when the hell did anybody, when's the last time somebody shot fireworks in your office building? You know, the thought process needs to change, but the brain automatically does that. And so I think with almost everything that we talk about and talk about in these topics and specifically in these shows, we try to compartmentalize, I mean, other people try to compartmentalize things that they want to see and that they're comfortable with. So whether you're on the right or you're on the left or wherever you're at, you know, it makes it easy for you because that makes you understand it. And then when you get challenged on that, that's when it becomes argumentative and defensive. And I'm going to shut up after this one, but this week, we were involved in a text thread of a video of a black male at some sort of function or meeting being drug out very aggressively by two security guards, right? You ever remember that?
Mm-hmm.
We're going through the metal detector.
Okay.
And so he's like, wow, that's crazy, that's bad, you know. And you know, I said, security guard, it's not the police, it's assault. Stan does a little more digging. Who is that person in the meeting, Stan?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. First off, he wasn't the lieutenant governor. As was
yeah, he's running for something, right?
Supporter. Oh, yeah. Oh, and you know, and see, this is why it's important for people to do research.
Exactly. And that's my point. That is exactly my point. But you know, you get something at face value and you look at it, right? Your own opinions, biases, norms and morals will start to play into it, right? You start to think about, well, man, that doesn't look good at all. Honestly, I didn't know who he was. I had no idea who he was. But I look at it from the objective of a police officer, right? And I thought, man, they are sure treating that man like crap.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him as a black man. I didn't see him as a Republican. I didn't see him as a guy that got court-martialed out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him as, man, they sure are handling that dude really roughly. And that ain't cool. So, I mean, standing there looking at it objectively, we would be looking those security guards up, right, based on information. But you go and you look at another video, which is inside the chambers. Did you see that video, Stan?
Oh, yeah.
And the guy is acting like a complete jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And you can act like a jerk. It doesn't mean somebody put your hands on you, though. But so that research, that looking into the topic as to what it is to find out the real truth behind it, that's what becomes important. That can be done sometimes very quickly. Sometimes it takes a long time to do. But then you form your own opinion based on the facts. And what we live in today is the quick flash, boom, in your face society.
There you go.
That throws it up there. And everyone goes, well, holy crap. You know, God, you can't be this. You can't be that.
You know, too.
There's a whole other section to that.
I'm glad you said that. I'm going to insert something here that's unscripted, but I'm going to insert this. You know, people will listen to the show. They'll like the show, not like the show. I don't care either way. But they'll say, you know, you speak strongly on this issue or this topic from a black perspective. They don't gauge whether what I say is factually true. They'll say, but your wife is white. So somehow because my wife is white, the message is now negated. without consideration. And I will say this, I don't care if my wife was black. Being married to me, Chief, your wife is white, you're white. Joe, you're black, your wife is black. Being married to me and doing this show is no day at the beach. You catch flack. And she's got to catch it. And if this is the purpose of this show, no matter the knowledge you get, the information you get, the direction you get, you got, that's all you can go to. Stan doesn't care personally. I really don't care. But you really will go after my wife because you're scared to call the show, 646-716-4621, and press 1. You're afraid to comment in the thread. You know, Rudy Allen is on the Facebook, and I love my Ruru, and she said, how can two walk together unless they agree? Amos 3:3. Very seldom will y'all ever hear me quote the Bible. I don't do a Christian show. I am Christian, but I do not do a Christian show because Christianity in America is part of the problem, Stan's personal opinion. You know, and so I wanted to put that out there, Chief, because you're absolutely right. People want to cherry pick based upon their group and their group's perception, not them. Oh, my old man, I do what I want. That's bullshit. You're not your own man. You're going to do what the job tells you, what the political party, what your religious stuff. You're not your own man.
Well, yeah, you got to understand that everybody's got their own. In their brain, they've already got their own understanding of the world, right? We're programmed that way. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just the way that you erase what you've encountered. You know, we talk about major critical incidents. Why is it that some officers can go through a critical incident, a mass critical incident, shooting, and mentally be okay? And we have some that don't. I mean, there's a difference between the two. And you know, research shows that, you know, if you're prior military, you have a better chance potentially of doing one of these, going through a critical incident, and no, having no adverse effects. And that may be true, and it may not be true. I have no idea. But so we're all wired in a certain way, right, based on our upbringing, you know, the norms that you have is from society. If you're socioeconomic area you're born in, you grew up in, you know, that all plays a part. The issue is you need to break those things down. I mean, we'll talk about implicit bias. I mean, implicit bias is one of the biggest things that's coming up in what we call the form of law enforcement, right? And there's been a lot of study of that. Even this is not anything new, guys. This is stuff that was talked about in the 21st century policing model under President Obama. I mean, I was in Washington listening to this speech about implicit bias, listening to a professor talk about it. Now, how do you determine an implicit bias? There's tests and whatnot. I don't know if somebody anything that so forth, but you have to be aware of these biases that you got. And it's not only just the color of somebody's skin. It could be that you have implicit bias against a certain, and the truck drivers or something like that. I mean, we all have it. Nobody is immune from it. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. You have implicit bias. It's proven.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to become aware of that, right? And I think that helps in when we start talking about conversation, when I'm dealing with somebody that is different than me, right? And understanding that there are differences of opinion out there, right? And we try to learn from one another. I think that becomes ultimately important. Not you need to listen, not listen to speak.
Amen. Izzy? I see you up there nodding. Come on, bro.
I mean, I agree with the chief. I would say that when it comes to policing, one of the things that I constantly see that is lacking is kind of a continued education model, which is lacking in all forms, in all aspects of our society. But when you have people who have the power to take your life and also imprison you, there's an astonishing lack of continued education and policing in all of these points. Implicit bias, for one. Most of the programs that I've talked to people about and heard about, it's a one-and-done situation. I mean, even when departments have implicit bias training, it's not continuous. It's not consistent. It's one-and-done. And it's one-and-done in, like, once a year, if you're lucky. Like, a quality department, that's the standard. That's the low bar, is one class a year on implicit bias. which is insane. Because you can't get an education that way. You can't get trained that way. You can't address implicit bias that way. That's just checking a box and moving on.
So I think one problem is that we give more training
for shooting a gun and certain things like that than we do on things like implicit bias, on things like mental health, on all of these things that could make workers better. And we don't do it. And I think of all the industries, policing needs continuous education constantly. I don't care if you're a 20-year veteran, if you're a chief, if you're needing constant education on what is happening and what needs to be done in your profession. And that's the only way we're going to address any of these issues, because sending someone to a therapist once after they shoot somebody isn't going to solve your problem. Sending them to an implicit bias training because you have to, which that's another thing. None of these departments are doing things because they want them. They only do things when they're forced to do them. And then when they're forced to do them, they only do them as much as they have to. They don't go above and beyond. They don't do that. So in policing, there needs to be a shift to where we are constantly educating these officers on appropriate conduct, on appropriate policies and procedures. It's just constantly reminding them that the only way you're going to change, you're going to start to change the culture, because the culture is the main problem. And it is a culture that is based around that sort of obstinate, I know better, you don't do this, therefore you don't know, holier-than-thou kind of hero status that implies they don't need these things to succeed. And they do. And that's the only way we're going to start shifting things is having continuous training, continuous education.
And I agree 1,000%, Izzy, but can I take everything that you just said, and if I were to encapsulate that and re-disseminate it to the community, not the black community or the white community or Hispanic community, but the encompassing community, because then I'd get rid of the far extremist, and I'm just dealing with knowledgeable, articulate, open people. I have to say, when you do have a good police department, where you're not dealing with these incidents outright, you're not in the media every day, but you don't know who the sergeant is over your district for afternoons, midnights, and day shifts. When you don't know the officers who work the area you live at, when you don't know that there's a Citizens Police Academy, when you don't know that there's a Police Explorer program, when you don't know that you can go up to your police department and say, I want a tour and have somebody show you what we do. Am I saying they're going to be 1,000% transparent? No. But am I saying, and brother, you know me, love you to death, and yet policing has a long way to go. But I have said on this show thousands of times, policing is a hard-headed profession that is resistant to change. It does not matter. We're going to use blue pens instead of black. You're going to have something going through the police union. We want to fight about it. That's how they are. But I say to the citizens, whether the ink is blue or black, at least we got them willing to write stuff down. So to the citizens, you're not going to be absolved from your responsibility. Yes, unfortunately, you have to be the check and the balance. I would much rather be the check and the balance than the victim and the dead body. I would much rather have some say-so. I would much rather do some research. Brother, I'm not disagreeing with you. Everything that you just said, I can transfer it over to communities across this country. I don't care what color they are. White folks who take for granted that their police department is great because nobody in their family's been arrested, that's bullshit. You know, black people who say, well, the police department ain't shit because my Uncle Bobo got arrested, that's bullshit. Come in and do some research. Find out what is going on. See, this is the premise. I love this open topic. I just loved it. Because this is what we do not do. We do not get to the problem. Once we get there, the corn on my little toe hurts. We want to make the corn comfortable for us, but not fix the condition. We don't want to dig deep enough. We don't want to spend the money. We don't want to spend the time. You know, I think that we are led by a bunch of charlatans out there right now, have never been police officers. They ain't never worked a damn call in their life. 90% of the people folks are following out there ain't never been in the patrol car and worked a call. Never. But they're experts on policing. They may know some facts on the incident, but they're not experts on policing. They don't know what the hell happened in that officer's mind before he or she came on the street. And you know what I find amazing is that none of these experts, and I watch, that's why I love what we do here. Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, I watch all of them. None of these people they bring on can talk about how many juvenile murders they've seen. How much is this? Joe Mosley sitting here every, I almost dropped a $10 word, every week. Not one CNN, MSNBC, you all go, this is the thing, we're stripping away your little safety corners today. Well, I listen to MSNBC and everybody on my Facebook listen. Well, your Facebook is bullshit because MSNBC is bullshit just like Fox is. Why isn't MSNBC blowing up John's phone? You want to do it, the police are all great and good story? Talk to John. See, we have to go, and that's what I love about you guys and what we do here. We go to what is real, not imaginary, not your perception. And everything you just said, these are fundamental questions. Can somebody answer them? I don't want an example. I want an answer. If you don't know, say you don't know. No hard part. Joe, you've been sitting back, bro.
Sometimes even a wise man tells me to be quiet, not to be wise. Of everything that's been said, I agree. It's interesting because everything that we're talking about, I mean, the educational part, I'm right now, Illinois has mandated CCE for most of our departments, which should be part of the national discussion as you talk about it. Even Devin, you know what I'm talking about. The problem is that we've got to deal with CBAs, contractual issues for different unions. Are you going to pay them to get the education? But the education is still mandated, so it's a double-edged sword. As you said, we've looked at the training, and not just in implicit bias. There's all kind of other training that should go on. We just put on the mental health training. One day we had 5 months, the next day was 0, and I got the message that we're not getting paid. We told you before, we're about to give you time and a half. But then they saw, because I first rolled it out to the command staff, but they saw the command staff sitting there, oh, we want that. But now when I give it to you, you don't show up. It's disheartening at best. But the problem is that at some point, we have an overarching entity which governs policing in the state of Illinois. Departments are going to start getting called on it, and they're going to start decertifying departments. Well, as the head of that department, who are they going to get first?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though we can show that we put the training out there, their reply to me was, even though they signed up for it, their reply was, I'm not being hit. I want the money. Wait a minute, you didn't say that. You need a bargain for that position, but time and a half on the books? Okay. All right, so here we go. So now we've got another issue. At some point, and this is probably going to piss some people off, police are not being done. So let's just call it what it is. We want it all. We want it our way. You know, I want the barbecue with the onions and the onion rings that will, you know, supersize my fries. So guess what? That's not the way it is. We have budget constraints too. But part of that budget constraint is the realization that as an industry, there is some regulations coming down the pipe. Long overdue. Way long overdue. And I still, as you and I have had this discussion, I think John all of us will agree, at some point, there's got to be a national reform platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to,
mm-hmm.
And it's got to, it's got to be, it's got to be a real one.
Amen.
But the stuff that they're pushing now, and for those of us that have been in the business, it's ridiculous. It's made out of a professor level ideology of these things are going to work versus asking people to be practical, right? That actually put the work in and say, hey, these are some of the things I think that we should do. These are some of the ideas we got. I mean, how many times have we said that on the show? Knocking on your door, gentlemen, asking you questions. No, they're not calling me either.
You know, Chief.
You know, I don't know where it comes from. I just got to ask.
But you know, to your point, you bring up a very good point, because I will say, from my experience, when I was a community police officer, and I'm out there, I lived in that neighborhood with those problems, and I was dealing with all of that stuff. And these people are knocking on my door when I'm off duty and I'm home, because they had nowhere else to go. So when I would go into these meetings, and this is my problem with when we want to talk about the hood, the community community meeting. Let's just be honest about it. Where do we hold these meetings? First off, where you hold the meetings has a lot to do with setting a tone and who comes. We hold it at a church. Do you think that prostitute, oh, so what? She's giving sex for money. She ain't killing nobody. But do you think she's going to come in here and say, I've been raped 3 times? I've had guns pulled on me. No, she's not going to come in there and do that. Do you think the Muslim is going to come in there? Do you think the atheist is going to come in there? No. So our selection on the place to hold the meeting, that's the first thing that's wrong. The second thing that we run into is we have these meetings, and we bring all these A-list speakers. The chief is going to be here. The city council person is going to be here. The mayor is going to be here. Bullshit. So what? They haven't done anything anyway. That's the reason you're having a damn meeting. And then we bring them there, and they come in with the solution. Well, if you have the damn solution, why are we having the meeting? Where have you been? And then we pass the microphone for questions, and I'll let you respond, Chief. We pass the microphone for questions at these community meetings. Keyword community, not city council, not country club, not black folks, not white folks, not Christian. We having a community meeting. You know where the microphone never seems to go to? The parking lot. See, I don't want to go to the back row. The back row is not the answer. Those are folks with the answer with the courage enough to walk through the front door. If you go out into the parking lot, you're going to find the people that are going to tell you, you know what, I'm not dressed right. I don't smell good. I'm gay. I'm not Christian. But when you go back to that part, those people, then you find the truth. America is afraid of the truth. And with that, Chief, I'll let you respond.
That's just a simple tenet of leadership. You know, if it's not something that you normally do, go ask the people who do it and get their opinion on it. You know, I use this example quite a bit in the office. You know, we're asking for pieces of equipment in our agency for the patrol officers. The officers in uniform out there answering calls for service. Well, we'll ask them if they think it's a good idea to have. Versus me just making an arbitrary and blind decision to just get it, then finding out 6-7 weeks later that the thing's a piece of crap. That's a basic rule of leadership. Go find the people that it affects and find out what they want. Don't come in with a solution unless you've been talking to those people. Whatever the problem is in the community, that's how problems get solved. You cannot just say, you know, Joe can't come up with a program in his agency that works for his place and mine. I mean, there could be some similarities, but there's not a blanket program you can come up with that's going to work in this community because they're vastly different from the
community. I agree with
you. You got to define it. You got to ask people, what is it that you want?
But then I say, but when you ask them, and I agree, and that's what separates your department from a hell of a lot of departments, and y'all need to, y'all don't contact them, you need to, is departments are not afraid to ask. They're afraid to hear. And they want to be selective in who they hear from.
Yeah, but I mean, that's part of the initial conversation. You have to put your big boy pants on and be willing to listen to things that you don't agree with. I mean, that's just the reality of this. And it doesn't, it goes into who's, we call the business, the law enforcement, who's badge is bigger. They start butting heads and yelling and screaming at each other because you got a different opinion. And you're not listening to listen, you're listening to talk.
And get us
to counter that point. You're getting ready to,
And to add to that, Chief, can we do this? When you're listening at these meetings, are you listening? Or are you waiting to defend your side? Going back to the topic. Stan could be, I can talk about a topic and be 1,000% right. Until I say, well, LGBTQ people shouldn't be treated like this. Women, we're holding this meeting at the church. How much of the audience is quiet now? Or if I say, I understand this particular council person is at this meeting. Where are the rest of them? Because the problem's in their neighborhood, too. Do I have to go call them out personally? If I say, where is the mayor on this issue? If I say, why is the audience flooded with preachers, black or white, who are living through this condition or dealing with members with this condition across the country? See, this is where we have to not be afraid to call everybody's ass on the carpet. None of us are without fault. Stan's got plenty of them. But I'm here every week. If you call me out on something, if I did it, I'll say I did it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm an imperfect human. That's exactly what it is. And I've been wrong a lot. And I've learned from my failures. And that's why, I learned from that stuff and take it deeply and personally when I do fail and try to correct it and move forward. Yeah, sure, I've pissed a lot of people off. 25 years in this business, you're going to make people mad. And I can't fix everything. Honestly, we just cannot fix it. Some things that people won't want to get done are just impossible for that to actually happen. But, we can try to do workarounds, and it becomes individualistic in a lot of cases. You'll have members who I'm just sitting here thinking about, the communication. I can't tell you how many people have my cell phone number. My city cell phone number. I mean, there's people that listen to this program that have my city cell phone number that call me, on the weekends and weeknights and stuff like that to deal with individual problems. And I try to work around as much as we can, but you listen. There's some things I can fix, there's some things that I just can't. Collectively, and I'm going to say this and shut up for a while, but collectively, if we all do it and we all work together, we can fix a ton of the stuff that we're having issues with.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to put forth the effort, and that's it. And the last thing is hit the people up that are actually doing the job.
Amen.
And have success. Don't come with some theory.
Amen.
Kick it around, and when somebody plays devil's advocate with it, don't cry. Don't get upset. We try to punch holes. I mean, I do that all the time. We try to punch holes and stuff to see if it really going to work playing devil's advocate. But don't get so upset when people start challenging you on those theories. And let's get some practical knowledge into this business. Let's get some good hands-on experience to fix these problems. There are a ton of excellent expert law enforcement officers and leaders throughout this country. I'm not so good. We keep hearing from the major networks.
Sheriff David Clark. I'll name one.
And their cities are screwed up. They're not doing anything correct. So, and with that, I'll be fine.
Chief, before I go to Joe or John or whoever wants to chime in, if I could sum up everything you just said, which is a catchphrase, cliche, or banner of this show. If you're going to come strong, have skin in the game. We don't need the cheerleaders, never take the field. Pom-poms and all, yeah, you look cute, you look great. But you ain't taking the hits. So, if you don't have skin in the game, everybody's opinion is welcome, but I think too many of us are following cheerleaders and not players. And the floor is open. Any of y'all want to come in? Come on in.
Hey, let me run this past you. Let me run this past you. This is what I use in teaching. if you look at our present situation with policing, take a diamond, a three-sided diamond, and put at each point theoretician, politician, practitioner. So let's say the theoreticians are the academicians. The politicians are the ones who are in the practitioner. So you get the theoretician comes up with an idea. Ooh, can you please, even if it's an idea to the politician, then enact it, then pushes it down to the practitioner. The practitioner then pushes it back to the theoretician. But in their rotation, there's somebody that gets left off. And here's the real symbiology is this. It's a triangle. It should be a circle. Because that flow should be continuously going both ways, not just one way. Also, in that diamond, you don't see community involvement. You don't see the people that are impacted by it anywhere in there. So, if you take that and use that as a mode of what's wrong, you can almost define it, where we should be attacking the problem from. At no point in the input process do you see community involvement. Or those who are impacted by it, those who practice it. So the practitioner, no matter what, even though he or she may be at the bottom of the pyramid, he's still not getting input from the people that aren't there. So again, it should not be a diamond. It should be a circle with a flow going each way. You don't see that. Maybe that's oversimplified. But
don't you think that's giving... That circle is giving people a place to speak by giving them a right to vote.
But again, it shouldn't be a diamond. That's the point.
Yeah.
That is the point. Because so if you look at it again from input-output process, what are the input, where's the output? Because if you look at the theoretician again, the theoretician's at the top. He pushes again, or she pushes it to the politician, down to the practitioner. At any point during that ebb and flow of that flow of information, do you see a both-way flow? You see a figure flow in one direction. There lies the problem. And again, what should be in there is not in there at any given point. Those who are affected by it. So at any point, you can put in that person or that group, whether it be between the theoretician going to the politician, from the politician to the practitioner, back to the practitioner to a theoretician, at any point, you can plug that in and start winning.
So how do you change it from this to this without just voting?
Well, again, Izzy is going to jump on this one. There's no question you got to vote. You and Izzy will go like this in a second, trust me. But you have to have that input, whether you vote or not, but you still have to have the input.
Let me insert this, Joe. And just to, if I can give a side, very side note, and should she choose to answer, she will. If not, I certainly respect that. But, you know, I know this young lady who I watched, everybody had their eyesights on her. I'm getting that. Who had a lifestyle that didn't line up with their beliefs. And I knew all that, but guess what? I wasn't trying to get her. I saw in her, this girl is mixed. She ain't that far off from me complexion-wise. What I have lived through at that time for 21 years is coming for her. I'm at the winding down of my career. Who the hell cares who Stan Mason is? He'll be gone, retired soon or dead or whatever the case may be. But she became more important than my career and my being. And the relationship, the bond, the high, and she never came out to me and told me anything about her personal life to that extent, and she'll reveal that as she wants to. But she didn't do that because she felt unsafe and I don't need to, because he sees me for who I am. Am. Yes, we're both cops. Yes, we both have badges and guns. But I never saw Claire with a badge and a gun. And I'm going to dig into something a lot. I'll lose people here But black people look at each other from a kinship perspective at all times. We just do, whether we're angry because we're embarrassed on something, whether we choose to speak or not speak, that is the way we perceive each other, because sometimes that is all we have. And when I saw that young lady's picture, she became instantly my daughter. Yes, there were some black people in her academy, but she's light-skinned. Hello, black people, get ready, strap in, because it's your turn now. She's light-skinned, just like me. I'm not black enough for some black people. Never mind that I went through the same things you go through and speak up more than you speak up. I'm not black enough for you. White people are not out there screaming, you're not white enough. I took her, not because she's mixed, Claire. Not because she was whatever her personal life is, Claire. At the end of my career, the end of me, it ain't about staying. The end of my career, I saw the one coming behind me that is going to have to deal with a bunch of shit I had to deal with. Being too black for white people and not being black enough for black folks. And said, I don't know everything, but let me give you everything I know. This is where, when we talk about conversation and problem solving, I think black folks, white folks, Christians, I don't care whatever group we bring, this is what I think we are all missing in America. The problem is about human rights, because we fail to look at our achievements, or we hold our achievements, I did, me, stand to this, you get your own, I did it, if I did it, you could do it. Bullshit. How about you not harp on your achievement and tell them how they can do it, how they can survive, how they can make a difference? How about one thing that's not taught in police academies? Nowhere it's not taught. Oh, you're the best of the best. You're here. God, you made it. Look at how many people you knocked out. You're so great. But they never train you about where you came from. How to hold on to a grandmother, grandfather, mother, father, high school friends, life experiences. This is what brought you to us to where now you're good enough. We want to hire you. Maybe we don't need people with college degrees to be police officers. I know folks will go, you're crazy. Am I? Am I crazy? The people cooking crack don't have college degrees. Look at how much money we spend on fighting that. And the second thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to be quiet on it, the people with college degrees are the reason this show is here. Every issue we talk about, every problem we talk about, all the why do we not have solutions, everybody in the position to make a change in America and solve this problem has a college degree. A thermometer hangs on the wall. It has more degrees than any man. And the only thing it can tell you is how hot or cold it is. I don't worry about if Stan knows how hot I am or how cold I am. When I'm uncomfortable, I'm going to deal with that. And I think we as Americans need to get out of this black, white, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. All that shit is bullshit. Blue Lives Matter. Personal opinion, insert here. Get rid of that damn Blue Lives Matter flag. Because I served in the military. And the flag I served and went to Desert Storm under was red, white, and blue. It wasn't gray and black with a blue stripe. Get rid of it. Because flag protocol says you will not alter or change the flag. Get rid of it. Well, we need it because our camouflage is subdued. If you're that afraid, don't wear the flag on it then. Do the warrant without the flag. And I'm not going to go into all that. But I mean, I just, Joe, you, Claire, I love the dialogue. That's what we do here. Let's just be 100 for a change. You know, and I'm bowing out. I'm sorry.
Wow. Wow, son. I don't know what to say about it all that. Jim, you had a question for me earlier.
Because we were on the topic of training and, I guess the enforcement of or lack of training. How many hours are actually required in Illinois?
Looks like they're going to 40 CCEs per hour, per year. I've got a juvenile specialist that has to get certain hours. My detectives have to have certain hours. The patrolmen have to have certain hours and certain issues.
Is that new?
Yeah, actually, it just came to existence, I want to say within the last, it was mandated within the last few years, 10 years, as you put teeth into it. But again, you're talking about the mental health stuff, CTI training, and some of those tend to the 40-hour courses, but you have to, again, keep them up. Real estate agents have to have CCEs. The fact that we can regulate real estate better than we can do our police department is kind of scary.
Well, I'm asking that question because, I do train at the academy, and I train continue ed as well. That means I'm waiting at 40 hours as a minimum standard, probably since the late 90s, early 90s. And I find it that it's interesting that, and I wanted to bring this topic up of how different each state is for continuing education in the law enforcement, because we are required crisis intervention training, we require mental health, we require the cultural diversity. If you don't have certain licenses, it's cultural diversity, asset forfeiture. There's a whole bunch of training that you're required to have, and as you go through licenses, you get the master peace officer license. There's certain things you still have, no matter what, you still have to have the 40. And then there's mandated every year certain courses that come out from the legislature. When you get to the chief level, and I think that was somebody brought up, and they made it to you about even the chief needing the training. I'm still required for, but I have to go to the Bill Blackwood Management Institute down in Huntsville, Texas, which is in the legislative. It's actually in law, but that's where I have to go to get my continuing ed. We get a broader spectrum of topics over the 40 hours, which include basically management, leadership, over these things that the officers are being taught. But I know if Izzy hasn't done a story, it's probably pretty close as to what the requirement is. And I just find it interesting when I meet officers from other states that they're like, yeah, we don't have to take any of that. Well, I'm like, to me, it's just absolutely foreign. I know California Post is pretty much the same way. But here in Texas, they'll get you. If you don't get that 40, license is suspended. So it actually does happen for people that don't go get that training, at least in this state, for sure. But I don't know. I would like to see better topics, more leadership, more things that were really affecting this business than just kind of, so-and-so taking whatever you can get your hands on to get the 40 hours. Legislative updates is always a mandate, but I think that the training could be a lot better. I think that they should scope it and change it to where it's somewhat what the chiefs and the assistant chiefs get, because it's a broader topic on a lot of different stuff that affects us versus just something.
Hey, Chief, can I interject real quick? And thank you for bringing that up. Because, like I said, we're getting into it now. Here we go. That's the bullshit of politics and semantics and policing. Because the fact of the matter is, chiefs and assistant chiefs don't write a ticket. The handcuffs are rusty. They don't even have a uniform. If you ask, no. If you had a national uniform day in your department, how many chiefs and assistant chiefs and lieutenants and captains could even put together a whole uniform to come? Hello, equipment belt. Handcuffs? No, Chief, you're here, so you're the example. But, my thing is, I agree with what you're saying. But this is the issue, is that so many chiefs and assistant chiefs, they have all these solutions. And now, for all you people to say, we hate the police and Stan hates the police, I'm going to call out and shout out to the patrol officers. the men and women who are out there busting their ass, doing the job, getting spit on, getting videoed, having to deal with all the crap, that are busting their ass, that haven't seen the chief in a roll call in how many months? How about that part? See, James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say. Chief, send all the memos you want. Send all the, you know what? I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. All these chiefs. Go ahead, Chief.
There's a lot of, there's a whole bunch of truth to that. I agree. I agree 100%. You got to walk the walk and talk the talk. No, my handcuffs are not rusty, by the way. The three pairs I carry.
Right. But you know.
Training in itself needs to be a hybrid version of most practical, and there is some theory in there. I mean, you can't get away from the theoretical portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
But your average patrol officer, I'll use an example. So in one of the last chief schools that I went to, we had a big breakdown on Ferguson. Well, it's actually a couple of chief schools. But we had the breakdown from the Department of Justice investigation into the Ferguson incident that took place, right?
Mm-hmm.
To understand that, right, you have to go delve deep into the problem, the root cause of that. Your patrol officer's not getting that.
Right, but first,
he doesn't understand that portion of it. And then the other part becomes, you know, you get up the political part of it, you know, to miss somebody's training costs dollars.
Right, but Chief, but I think the patrol officer is one notch above the public that is also hidden from the truth, because it does not serve the interest of the council people, the mayor, the city managers, and all these people who do get the statistics and do know the truth. Let me ask you this. In the training you went to, everything that was disclosed, everything was talked about. There was nothing top secret. There was nothing major that's going to trash any police department. So I say this. If you have community members who say, I am willing to go to an open training class, the officers are going, they're getting, say they're going for 10 hours, they're getting 10 hours of TCLO's credit in Texas. TCLO is our mandated training, we got to get documented. If they're going to that, why shouldn't Izzy or John or Claire be able to sit in that same training? They're not getting any credit for being there, but they are getting knowledge.
It's transparency.
Exactly. There we go.
Yeah, except for the classes are law enforcement only.
Right, but why? Some classes I agree with, but de-escalation, conflict resolution, communication. Why are these classes, while they are open to the officers that need them, I agree 1,000%. I'm not disagreeing with you. Some stuff we need to do on our own. I agree with that. But some things.
If you want to take the time to come sit through arrest, search, and seizure, then you're more than welcome to come, because that class is horrible.
It is.
Here's where I'm going to argue. I'm going to let Joe talk. Here's where I'm going to argue. It's not my job to teach you.
Yeah.
It's your job. It's your job to learn. I do share the knowledge of arrest, search, and seizure and things of that nature, you know, but if you don't know your rights,
but Chief,
and I'm in an encounter with you, it's not an opportunity for me to try to teach you, not, I say rights, if you don't know what is acceptable and unacceptable under the Constitution,
right,
and the state laws, it's not my job to teach you.
It's not.
I'm gonna respect them and I'm gonna follow them, but again, we talked about this in the previous show, you need to educate yourself
mm-hmm.
along the law.
Now, I agree with you, but let me ask you this. No, it is not your job. You got enough shit to deal with in the department. I don't care if you got 5 officers or 500. You got enough shit to deal with. But it is the job of that district attorney who was elected by the people to represent the people. And why doesn't the district attorney host most cities have a city cable channel? I know the one I used to work at has one. If you could put on a panda and a pineapple marching down the street to support whatever special function you want, you can't tell me we're going to do a segment on arrest, search, and seizure. Let the city attorney, now who does our legislative updates in Texas? The chief doesn't come down there and do them. Who comes and does them? District attorney.
As I said, it's not the district attorney's office.
It's one of his representatives.
Right.
So if they're good enough to teach us, why are they not good enough to do an open forum? Because it's not a matter of getting into semantical arguments over this situation or that situation, but it is important, if nothing else, they could walk away and say, look at what we did. We had a citywide open forum on legislative updates. If you could tell me what Chip and Joanna Gaines were doing in Magnolia, that's on the cable channel. You could tell me all this other stuff, then tell me what I need to survive. Now, we're getting hard right now, but let's just go on and call it out. You know,
I definitely want to hear what Joe just said.
He's on their cooking. So, look, a friend of mine, Mike Dunn, said something, and I want to share. There's two issues. The first one is we're confusing training with teaching. That's point one.
Right.
The second point is that whose responsibility is it to inform the public? I think we all have a joint responsibility.
Amen.
Does one have more than another? I would say so, but see, it's easier for them to hammer the police because we're low hanging fruit.
Right.
I have yet to see anyone go after the state's attorneys, district attorneys.
That's right.
Parents. And that's where I have a problem. The state's attorneys, district attorneys are let off the hook just by virtue of our intelligence. We get left on the hook by the virtue of we can be in
common.
So we have to shift some of the weight and a lot of the blame, at least in my mind, to those prosecutors that we elected.
Claire,
that we elected. And where, you know, squarely to put up other people who are just saying that this one group is bad and they're going to take the brunt of this hit. Now, in that group, we still need to include the judges, at least in my mind, and you got to include the defense attorney. I mean, nobody getting blamed, but everybody wants to put it on this particular section of society. They call the police. Are all the police good? Nah, let's not lie about that shit. At the same time, are the prosecutors doing all that they could do? And I'll tell you no, but no one's holding them accountable. Everybody wants to hold our feet. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong, we got policing as a lot to write. But remember this, policing can only react to those laws that are given to them. And again, it goes back to my diamond, who enacts the laws? The theoreticians and politicians. So we're back to that diamond, not a circle.
And also the understanding, our role is the enforcement, not the judicial portion of it, not what you get. So it goes, it's right in line with what you say. Somebody is not held accountable or is over-accounted for because of a particular crime. That's not us. We didn't do that. We enforced the law as it was written by our legislative bodies. And so you're right. I have a deep agreement with you on that, Joe, 100%.
It's a collective. You know, it's not I, it's we. And unfortunately, the eyes have it in this case.
Right.
So,
right.
But nobody else is, you know, we get hammered daily. But here, prime example. In the city of Chicago just a couple days ago, a fight was recorded. Two guys are fighting. One guy gets the better of the other guy. The guy gets knocked down. The other guy stands over on the knife and kills him. State's attorney did not charge that case on murder. Charged out as a misdemeanor. Now, in my mind, he should have been charged with murder because the guy was on the ground. But she charged it out as mutual combatancy, even though the one the victim was on the ground on film getting stabbed by a second offender.
Mutual.
Look it up if you think of anyone, please. Look it up.
Oh, my God.
Look it up. There you go. And again, Mike says that I haven't heard of him. Our role is just not enforcement. Policing for us on this panel, policing is a new thing. And by that, I mean, it is not our fathers and forefathers in the 50s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just law enforcement. It is all-encompassing. It is the community. It is where you live. I mean, we've gotten away from knowing our neighbors. We've gotten away from saying hello to people. We've gotten away from, you know, stopping in and just saying hello. Now we have to mandate officers to get out of the car. That's fucking ridiculous. And here's the term that we got away from, common sense. Half the job is common sense. You don't have to beat up people. You don't have to shout at people. The real reason we, from what I was taught, you can't smoke flies and sugar and shit.
You know, Joe, I think a lot of it, too, is that policing has evolved into into an interdepartmental competition for image that favors the department, not the citizens and not the people. We want to put the right people who are recognized in the community, not because they're known by the least of the community, but they're always on TV. So we'll put them up there. We got to be going the right way because Officer so-and-so is saying this or doing that. But then that officer, black or white or Hispanic or male or female or whatever the hell, that every detective in the department is clamoring and sending messages to, hey, can you find out who's doing this? That officer never gets credit. Why? Because they're trusted in that community. I think we as a profession have forgotten that there's two words that describe what we do. It ain't hero. It's not Lord and Master. It's not Final Solution. It is public servant. And we have forgotten the art of humility. Humility means strength. Like I said earlier in the show, there is nothing great about Stan. I'm probably the most pig-headed, dumbest person you're ever going to meet. I'm not without fault, and I'm not ashamed to say. You know why I learned about drug dealing from drug dealers? I learned about prostitution from prostitutes. I learned about homelessness from homeless people. I learned about being hungry from hungry people. I learned about how white folks feel from white folks. When we think we know it all, because we have a title, we're not even in the discussion. Sometimes we have to go to our quiet place and say, and I say this, and I'm going to say this, it's not anybody's opinion on this page, it's Stan's page. And I'm going to give you all a piece of Stan's personal retirement. I look back many nights, and I look at how I did my job. What I said, what I did, individuals pop into my head, incidents pop into my head, the show pops into my head, and I don't have a go back and forth point. I don't have a struggle point. Because fortunately for me, and it's not because I'm anybody profound. I'm not anybody smart. I have a high school diploma. A lot of you are listening to this, you don't know. I don't have a master's, a PhD, a bachelor's degree. Waco PD took a chance on me with a high school diploma. For all of you to say you need a bachelor's degree, if Waco thought that, there would have been no Stan Mason. It's not the Stan Mason is all that. But I wasn't so educated that I couldn't see what's going on. And then I wasn't so educated that I didn't go home at night and say, this could have been me. It can be me. And if I don't do or say something, it will be me. Not for black folks, but for all folks. And this is where I wanted to do this show, and I just wish America could understand. Get out of your black, white, Republican, Democrat, Christian corner and understand that everything you see can be you. And everybody you're cheering for will not be in your corner when it comes for you. So everything you say, You know, everything Mike just said is exactly right. We become so educated that we lack what Joe, what you said, common sense. Because we can give a theory on why this is the way to go. Apply that theory to that mother sitting in that apartment. Insert race anywhere you want. Whose kids can't eat? Apply that theory. And we're going to do a show on the Green Book. And I'm going to say this here, folks, if you get offended, contact me after the show. The Green Book is lies. While you all wave the flag and tell me how great America is, how far we've come, I'm going to invite you to do this. Watch that Cadillac Escalade commercial with the black celebrity in it. Only celebrity in the commercial, by the way, is black. That will come on anywhere from between 10 and 11, depending on where you live. They get in the car. Guess where they drive? To the local coffee shop. Or they put some makeshift after kids in, they drive to dinner locally. But then in the same commercial, the white family gets in the Cadillac Escalade. Guess where they're driving? Across America. They're not worried about police. When they show the Cadillac Escalade and all its features, guess what there isn't? There isn't a video camera up there documenting where they go and where they are. This is America today. Not just because it's not that way for Stan or Joe or Izzy or Chief. It is America for too many. And too many is too much. That's, you know, for me, and I know this was a very vague topic, a very open topic, and I love the way it's going because we're all searching down in us. Chief Devlin could put his family in his car and drive across America today and not have a worry. But Chief Devlin could ride across America with Stan.
We're going to get stopped.
Amen. There it is right there. Floor's open.
Response. And I agree with Mike. I guess go around thinking about we do educate the public. We do it every day on stops and contacts, and you're 100% correct there. And as far as the enforcement portion of it, I can only speak for myself, for my agency, and you're 100% correct. It does go beyond that. But the system itself hasn't evolved. When we start talking about the DAs and the state's attorneys, that enforcement portion of it for what we're supposed to be doing, it takes on a whole other life, but the other portions of our program have not evolved to that level. I think it is not the de-evolution. I think it is the evolution of police, Joe, that's the way we go, because we find out that departments that are doing that, going beyond just hooking people up and throwing them in jail, those are the successful agencies, those are the successful places. So I do believe that's the route that we need to move towards in law enforcement. And, you know, Stan, the idea about the theory, that we're trying to apply, that's the problem with it. Mm-hmm. It's a theory. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've proven this. You look at community policing, the vast vague idea of community policing, and you ask, what does that mean? What's the definition of community policing? It depends on where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
It's specific for your area. Mm-hmm. What works in LAPD is not going to work for my community in Texas. Maybe pieces of it, I can take it. What works for Waco PD may still not work in my community, even though we're next door. So each one of those has become specific. And I think that direction and defining that with, as Joe said, the community involvement, that's what makes this thing well-rounded, and that's why it ends up working.
And Chief, to your point, if we're going to go into community involvement, hello, black folks, don't get too comfortable. Y'all nodding and waving and waving a hand, get ready. We got to stop voting color. That's Stan's thing right here. I'm going to go there. But that's an issue with me. When you vote just colors, but you point the finger at white folks and say, these white folks just vote for white folks. See, That is the issue. You need to vote the issue. Now, what does that encompass? I need to be an educated voter. What is relevant to me? Stan, I'm not talking about Jim or Joe or John or Izzy or Claire. I'm talking about what's important to Stan right now, self-preservation, personal law of nature. Or we need to vote for so-and-so because he's black. You don't even know who the hell so-and-so is. He hasn't been in your community. He or she has done nothing in your community. And I say, just apply the same recognition to that person that you apply to white folks. And for folks say, well, you said vote for white folks. Hell yeah. I'm not saying all white folks are bad. Just like I won't say all black folks are bad. But I'm saying we are not educated, well-informed voters. Now, you say, why is that important? Most of you, most of the videos I've seen, whether they're on YouTube, Facebook, I get a ton of them sent, you know, it's city ordinances. It ain't federal law. It ain't even state law. It's a city ordinance. Where were you when the ordinance was read? First reading, second reading? Were you there? Did you question it? Did you say something? No. But now you want to be a professional victim. And it's not just black folks, it's white folks too. Professional victim in black folks' language is white privilege in white folks' language. That's a hard fact. We have to get down to being able to say, you know what, I'm going to be a man or woman. I can, Claire can tell me something, I can agree with Claire or disagree with Claire. Or I can choose to go further and say, I disagree, but help me understand. And to policing, I say this. Ladies and gentlemen, if y'all don't get nothing else from what Stan said today, too much emphasis is put on the men and women out on the street. They are not the ultimate problem. They're a representation of a department that has political bullshit that comes down that they have to go out and enforce, special privilege that they have to go in and deal with every day. This officer screwing this officer and everybody sitting in the room with pistols, and we all know what happens at the club if you step on somebody's boo's foot. Hard talk. That is real. I'm not absolving them of whatever they do. But we are not spending, and I don't see it in major media, there's not enough attention being paid to some of these chiefs, some of these city managers. And if you're in the city with an assistant city manager over police and fire, there's not enough attention being going there. The mayor's ass is not being held to the ground. If you're a city council person and you got there on the black vote, they trust me. Why are you not dealing with these issues? Oh, we ain't gonna call about that so-and-so. I will light a black politician's ass up in a heartbeat on this show. It ain't got nothing to do with politics. If you don't have Stan's best interest in heart, number one, Stan. Not the neighborhood I live in. Not the council district. You ain't got my best interest in heart. I'm lighting your ass up or meeting you to find out why. Then I'll work my way up. And that decides my vote. Educated voters. And some of this conversation has got to come to that point. I didn't want to go into a voting thing, but it's got to come to that point because I think we're so decisive in America, we vote Republican or Democrat, black or white. We don't get into, you can vote for, I'm voting Democrat. How well have you fared under the Democrats versus the Republicans? Stan's personal opinion. Not everybody in the Republican Party. But the establishment is racist. They're disconnected from black folks. They don't have enough black folks in their party to know how black folks think. That's my opinion. Not necessarily a fact. But I'm not so shut off that I don't listen to a Republican who says something. I'm going, damn, he or she got it. They may get my vote. When I listen to the Democrat who panders, and it's shown me nothing, who I've never met, doesn't go to the barbershop I go to, doesn't even know the address of the last drive-by shooting. We all, you know, not we all, I'm sorry, I apologize for that. Folks say that I'm Christian. God will judge me on me. But we spend so much time propping up them that we don't even know who the hell me is. I love everybody. Well, who's a black guy? Well, you know, here's LGBTQ person. Exodus. They're all wrong. You don't love everybody? That's why I want to do this show. Let's just get real. We're not enemies. We're not, because we don't agree doesn't mean we all hate each other. And the system has built us so much in the last 2 years. Everybody white I hate. I can't stand y'all. How the hell do I say that and go in the dining room and eat with my wife? All black people are thugs and drug addicts. But you ain't got no problem taking to get your oil changed. Everybody there working is black. Oh, Christianity is great. And it's all this and all that. Well, there was a shooting on the steps of the church. That's why we do this show. Not to call the individual out, but not so much even the action, but the lack of reaction from these same bullshit people on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. I'm tired of looking at their old pasty faces. And that includes the black folks, too, who look ashy with titles that sit up there and talk about how they're so in tune with the black community. And you show me nothing. And we're here every week. I'll say to them, I'm going to issue a fair invite, open. Y'all can find me. Hell, you're rich. I'm not. Come here. We're not going to bring you here to tear you up. Come here. We're ready for you. I got experts all around me. We're ready. Go ahead, Chief.
I'm sorry. I'm going to tear you up. I'm just saying.
You know, well, we're at 17 minutes, so we'll go around and get final thoughts and get out of here. Big John, you've been quiet, bro. I know you got a lot over there. You got plenty of time. Come on, bro.
First of all, I want to thank everybody on this panel, man, because it's a beautiful panel. God gave me actually the topic that I'm working on for a future show. And I think it was Izzy who kind of like really sparked the thought, because he said that the police have the power to imprison you. And as I'm sitting here thinking, do they really have the power? They have the power to arrest. But the power to imprison, because we all have the right to a jury trial, now I'm looking at the credibility of the community. For someone who has been to trial before, I sit out there and listen to, as much as we say we don't trust the police, we don't. But when I was selecting jury, I never forget this. And every person to set the jury that came up, they asked me one question. Sitting here today, listening to a police officer, would you believe his testimony over anyone else's testimony? And everyone said yes. Everyone, every black person, every white person, every Puerto Rican, everybody gave the police that much credibility, right? So the question that I have now for the community, and I'm going to shape this show, and it's about the credibility of the community. Because in one essence, you say you can't trust the police, you don't believe the police. But, and see, all this ties into something that Jim said. He said Stan talked about research and so on. So as a juror, do you listen to the evidence or do you just want to get out of here? Mm-hmm. So you don't listen to the evidence. You basically convince someone who may be innocent just because you want to get out of here. You don't listen to the evidence. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of credibility questions that came out of this show for me, mm-hmm. that I want to shape the show up and present to the community. Do you really trust the police or you don't trust the police? I don't know which one it is, because I know the man's on trial for his life. You seem to give the police a whole lot more credibility in his testimony.
And that's all I'm saying.
You know, John, you said something that was key. You talked about and answers. You know, this show, we don't have any answers. We're giving our opinions and our experience. But when you leave this show today, or you share it, or you listen to it later, listen to what people said and develop your own answers. It's your answer. It's not ours. We're not going to tell you what to say. This diverse panel of people are going to tell you what is real. You pick your answer. You're held accountable to it. And I'll tell you, one of the proudest additions to this show is that man on the screen right now, John Ruffin. I was a police officer 25 years. John damn near did as much time in prison as I did on the street. And we met. I was an average officer. I did what I needed to do, what was right, what I felt was right, you know, within the parameters of my general orders. This man ran a criminal enterprise. Celebrities have chapters in their book about him. I know what some of y'all young folks are going to think, gangster, thug, tough guy, John. Scroll back and look at a few shows ago. When the guy on the screen broke down in tears. Not because he killed some rivals. Not because he embarrassed some police. But because he voted. For the first time in his life, 24 and a half years in prison. Drug kingpin. Millions of dollars. Set over hundreds of thousands of dollars in drugs and money in front of him. And his biggest claim to fame in this life is I voted. I don't keep people around me because, you know, I don't think I'm special. And I don't think I'm anybody select. But you know what? I am me, and I'm in charge of me. And I'm going to do me. And John and these people you see on this panel, this is my inner circle. This is my go-to when I'm struggling. These are the people that see things with Stan that y'all don't see or don't know. We all have diverse opinions. We all have diverse views. We have different ways of how we think stuff should go. But if I don't listen to Joe, I don't know. I don't learn. I don't listen to the chief. I don't know. I don't learn. But I don't listen to Claire or John or Izzy. I don't know. I don't learn. And we all do it in phone calls and messages and text messages. And we come up with a great idea for a show, and somebody else says, I'm going to go, well, shit, I never thought of that. This show is 100. No sponsors. No credits. No advertisers. We don't ask any of you for GoFundMes, donations, Cash App is over here. We don't do that. We make it work every week. Go ahead, John.
One second, please. Why I love doing this show, and some, I think it was Jim earlier who said something, but everyone that's on this panel, you look at Joe, you look at Jim, and the way that they look at leadership and policing is that they're making the job easier for the ones that are coming behind them. They're making it better for the one that's coming behind them. When you think of Izzy and journalism, for the future journalists, Izzy is making the job better for them because they're going to look and see the legacy that he has left and say, that's how I want to do journalism. And the same can be said for you and Claire as police officers. Former police officers, that anyone who comes and says, I'm riding in this car that Stan Mason used to drive, I'm honored. Because he made policing better. And that's what living as humans on this earth, our whole life should be about. Those that are coming after us, have we made it better for them? And that's the ultimate question for me. And that's the reason why I'm a part of this show, and I love being here every Saturday. And
bro, John, I appreciate that, bro. I love that. But I don't want it to be worried about Stan Mason's car. And I know you didn't mean this, but I'm going to say it for me once and for all. I am who I am. You know, I have people who support my stance and what I do. And I reach out to them and I love and I respect them. I don't want anything labeled or changed by Stan Mason or Joe Mosley or Chief Devlin or behind the blue curtain. All we're saying is we don't need recognition. We just want to say, wake up. You're missing a point over here. You forgot this. You didn't think about this. See, when all of us on this panel, Claire being the youngest, Claire, trust me from experience at 59, when you're gone, this is not going to change. This discussion will go on, but it will go on with progress being made. It's not important that Stan is mentioned or Chief Devlin or John or Izzy. It's not. We become, in a new age, we are a reference point. We are a marker. We are a staple, researchable. Folks can go back and pull this show up when all of us are in the gray and say, well, what about this part? Let me play this video. Do we have the answers here? No, we don't. But do we dare to ask the question? That is important. That is what is missing in America. It's not the answer. It's that nobody in America dares to have the balls to stand up and ask the questions. That is the issue. And then be willing enough to accept the answers. Izzy, looking down. Come on, bro. You've been quiet a while. I know you're ready to go.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't have much to add for anything. I mean, I'll just say one thing and reiterate what I said about police having the power to imprison people. And that means that technically, it may technically only have the power to overrun us, but there are thousands of people in jails and prisons around the country right now that have not seen a judge or a jury before getting thrown behind bars. And that was a police officer who was involved in that. So it's a question of what the laws are, but also how the laws work. Another thing I'll add is that we like to say that we don't have answers, but there are definitely answers to certain problems. I mean, there are national standards that can be had. I know people in the policing world don't like the concept of national standards, and we all like to say that every state's different, every police department's different. But when it comes to things like use of force, when it comes to things like arrest practices, when it comes to violence perpetuated against people, we can agree on some national standards of things you shouldn't be allowed to do. I don't care if you're in Alabama or you're in New York City. There are certain practices that just aren't needed based on a general principle of that common sense that we're talking about. And when you've got police departments where you have officers that are trained for a less amount of time than a hairdresser, that's probably a problem. There's probably an answer to that that we could probably find that we could get done. Maybe we should train for longer. I mean, smaller departments, you've got 18-year-olds who are getting guns and they're only trained for like 4 weeks, five. Like, there's an answer to that. That's definitely something we could do to change that. So I think it's about having tough conversations as always, but it's also about accepting some realities and just making those common sense decisions and those changes that can be made but aren't, and finding out why they're not, because someone's benefiting from these policies and practices. You got to look at who's benefiting, who's profiting off of these policies and these practices, because there's a reason they're in place and there's a reason it's continuing to be that way. And then to boot, when we talk about the public input and everything like that, and the conversation that's happening nationally, I think we got to get past all these feelings, because right now everybody just likes to feel better.
Yeah.
Which is why optics are really kind of commanding the conversation, you know, like why police departments can say, oh, we did do some force training. Oh, we've got crisis intervention training. We did the new program. They get in the paper. Everybody sees it. They feel better. Mm-hmm. And they think that the problem solved. You know, mm-hmm. the cop who's playing basketball with the inner city kids. They're like, oh, look at that. Everything's fixed. It's all about people want to feel better.
Yeah.
And they think that because they feel better, then the situation has been solved. And it's short-sighted and it's shallow. And optics are kind of dominating everything now. And you got to look past the optics. And you've got to look in. Because if you don't want to see it, it doesn't make you feel better. Odds are that's the place you should be looking for. You should be paying more attention to. But in terms of changing policing in general, there's a long way to go. We mentioned de-evolution earlier, and we mentioned getting back to some sort of time when policing was this kind of mythical, functional system.
Yeah. Where was that? Thank you. Thank you. And people with PhDs, and I got 35 years as a cop. We're getting away from the issue. We're not talking about the issue, which is police community relations. Okay, you had 35 years as a cop, but how many years do you have in this neighborhood under these conditions? So we're going to do the training and sign it off on everybody's records. We paid you $50,000 or your company to come in and do the training. Look, we look good on paper. Nothing changes.
Well, I mean, nothing changes because training is a band-aid over a bullet hole. But it's like we always pull out training and say, if we train these officers better, then things are going to improve. That's a small fraction of what needs to happen. Because training isn't going to solve the problem if you're letting these guys in the door to begin. Like, you have to do, it's training, it's hiring, it's advertising. It's look how policing's advertised in this country. Look how it's propagated in popular media and entertainment. Like, look, you have to deal with all of it. People roll out training and think we're going to solve the problem, but if a guy is an asshole, you're not going to train him out of being an asshole. He's just going to be an asshole who's now learned how to keep being an asshole, mm-hmm. and get through the lines.
But if we...
So
but if, doesn't
solve the problem.
No, and to your point, if we dig a little deeper...
We understand.
You know... Hang on one second. Let me hit that because I want to get this in. Izzy, to dig into your point a little deeper because you bring up something and the blog talk will end, but the show will go on. You know, training is the issue. The unwillingness to dig in. Derek Chauvin did not become Derek Chauvin at that point. He didn't turn into Derek Chauvin that day on George Floyd's neck. He wasn't somebody who started a job a year ago. What about his career? What about the complaints against him? many of which were sustained by the department or given up. Don't do that no more, Derek. And look at what it cost, not just that department, not just the Floyd family, not just his family, but look what it cost the nation. What you said is very profound. We've got to get away from this magic mirror, romper room solution of we're doing training, so look, magic mirror, tell me today, did all my kids have fun at play? Hell no, a lot of them didn't. And we cannot be afraid to not go there. Stop taking the swallowing the pill and not asking what is it, or ask what is it before you swallow it. We pay these people, not just police chiefs and police officers. We're paying the city council in some places, not in all, but we're paying the city manager. We're damn sure paying him, the mayor, but we're not holding these people's asses to the fire. Because we're too ready to surrender because they're Republican and I'm Republican, or they're Democrat and I'm Democrat. That's bullshit. You hit stand, I'm coming at you, bro, with everything. I don't give a damn if you're Republican, gay, straight, LGBTQ, Christian, Muslim, Jew. I'm bringing everything. And that's the way we need to approach the social issue, not from the violent aspect. But Izzy, why'd you hit me? Let me hear Izzy's reason why Izzy hit me. I can agree with it or disagree with it. I can react upon it or choose not to react upon it. But I have a better understanding of why Izzy hit me, which even in my darkest, quietest corners away from ego, I'm going to look at myself and say, did I do something that made Izzy hit me? He didn't have the right to hit me. He didn't have the right to hit you, but what did you do? Could you have said it better? Could you have done it better? Self-reflection. That's what's missing in America. We're so reactive today. You know, I agree with you, brother. Claire?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, I'm with you now. Pretty much just, I would say try, I would ask everybody to try and look upon themselves and know who they are. And what makes them sick and what makes them do what they want, do what they're doing every day. Whether that's going to work at a certain place or not going to work at all or whatever that is, what makes you choose to do what you're doing? I think that's my message. I hope that everybody does some self-reflecting and asks themselves, what are you doing today to help your community, to help yourself? Why are you doing what you're doing?
And to the least of those people, the ones who make you uncomfortable, the ones who don't look like you, they don't think like you, they don't believe what you believe, do you somehow care about them less than the stranger you're willing to do a Facebook Live giving a sandwich to that you know nothing about? America needs to wake up and get real. Big Chief, come on, bro.
I don't disagree with anything. I think it's a whole other show topic in itself about the hiring, retention, training. And that's the truth behind it. What Izzy said is the band-aid over the bullet hole. There's no accountability and or continual push on the training and checkbacks. Then it's just not going to be valid. The other part about what he said is very true. You know, we can't train an asshole from being an asshole. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think specifically because you brought up their children, whether it was willful intention on the part of his command staff to not hold him accountable or union or whatever it is, that there needs to be a route for people like me to hold you and discipline you for being an asshole. And in a lot of places, that is not the case for people. There are agencies that have leadership that do want to hold people accountable for their actions, mm-hmm. but it's impossible for them to do so because of many different reasons. But there should be a measure in place for us to hold you accountable, and we can. I can. I can in my place for sure. getting the right person in the beginning is so important. It is absolutely 100% important. And that makes the difference. And it, and a good officer and one that's going to cause you trouble down the road. To Claire's point, I agree with her. You know, you got to be able to look at yourself, self-reflect, but you also need to understand and have the capability to not flop the handle when you come across somebody that disagrees with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of that. I see a ton of that in this country, where you're just so hell-bent on your opinion and you can't stand the fact somebody has a different one than you.
Mm-hmm.
We can get over that hump, which, you know, that's an individual issue, but if we could ever get over that hump, I think we'd be in a much better place. So, have the emotional intelligence to deal with folks that don't look like you, don't think like you, don't act like you.
All right, T, appreciate you. Big John, final thoughts, bro.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that. yeah, man, everything that everyone said, man, is on point. And I believe, like Izzy, man, there are things that can be fixed, man. And I've even seen some assholes getting straightened out. Because, you know, the thing is that some people thrive in certain environments, and when you take them out of the element, you can't be an asshole or beat them at being an asshole. So you can't go there with that person on these things. And when you force someone to come over to your way of thinking, your way of living, you could change people. You could really change people. I'm a perfect example, man. I believe that at one point that I was a huge asshole. And
you think?
Speaking of assholes, speaking of assholes. No, but seriously, man, it's things that can happen in the course of life that can change them. And maybe another time I can share something that I know personally with a correctional officer who I've watched beat up inmates and close monitor units. And it was a couple books that he read. And I'll share with you guys another time that story. But I kid you not, from the time that he read those books, I've never seen him put his hand on another inmate. After that, it could be something that could change a person's life. And, you never know. So have faith in all people, believe in all people, believe in the good. We can sit here and look at everyone and find good for them. But can you look at people long enough to find the gold that's in them? And that's what this show does. It tries to find the best in people and bring out and extract the best in people. The situations, and hopefully we're making a difference in that way. Peace.
All right, brother, let's go up. Big Claire, come on. Wolfie, that's my nickname. Y'all can't call her Wolfie. That's my pet name.
That was a great lander right there.
All right, well, we'll go over. We got to get... call her out, John. Welcome her in. Call her out.
Hey man, I thought that was good, but I agree with you. I agree with you. Upon self-reflection, there needs to be a lot of accountability with that. And you need to take responsibility for the crap that you've done, the crap that you said, and make the difference with that, though, in my opinion. I think there's a sense of, like Chief Devlin said, that emotional intelligence with that willingness to step forward and say, I messed up, I did something wrong. And that goes to self-reflection. You got to be able to self-reflect to be able to say that maybe you did something wrong. And when you come forward and say, yeah, I messed up, then it gets somebody else to say, yeah, I messed up too. Here's where I messed up. And once you get some more people to say and come forward and be honest with themselves and with each other, that's where you're going to find that transparency.
You know, Claire, before I go to Joe to end the show, I'm gonna say this. You know, I don't care about likes and views and clicks and shares. And you know, I don't call everybody. How many views did we get? Who said what? Who said what? I don't care. The mission of the show is more important than the motive or any one person or their ideologies. And to all y'all that may look at it from the safety of Facebook Live, and you can comment on live, you don't have to be worried. It takes a lot of balls to come on this live and stand up and say, I am this person, and here's what I think, why I think it. I got two chiefs of police on here. I'm retired. I got an investigative journalist who has a reputation that's here. I got a guy, we're also stuck up on Facebook about our image, and we're this and we're that, who will come on and tell you I've been 24 and a half years in prison. I was a notorious drug dealer. I could have made a phone call and had people erased who are right now rejoining retirement. That's power. We all want power, right? We all want persuasion and change. But this guy's biggest claim to fame is, I could have made a phone call and ended your life. I saw millions of dollars. But my crowning achievement in my life was not overcoming 24 and a half years in prison. It was voting. I got a young lady that I met that went through the police academy where you get indoctrinated with the hero drug. You got it all. And came out and sat at the poker table of policing. And one day the cards got shuffled and cut and dealt, and she got sent to a shooting where she had to take somebody's life at a young age, brand new into policing. Nobody in the department knows her. They're sitting right here, right now on the show. I don't need a 50-year-old veteran. Well, you know, back in 1975, I killed a guy. I don't need that bullshit. We're beyond that. This show is not the Stan Mason show. Not about me. I got a chief of police that comes on and gets 100 friends, parent, talks about issues, goes into great depth with specificity, and says what's going on. Some of y'all are going to, maybe you'll share this show, maybe you won't, but you'll share what Beyonce wears. You'll share the newest knucklehead video. But when somebody in your family is killed, you'll be sending me messages, thoughts and prayers. Can I talk to you? Mm-mm. George Clinton said, to each his reach. If I don't cop, it's not mine to have. These people you see around me right now, and I'm going to assume y'all's screen looks like mine, which I'm in the center. Not by design, it's just the way it is. These people know me. These are the people I text message, I call. They call me, Stan, you were out of line. Stan, think more about this. Stan, you were right. Stan, you were 100%. How's your wife? How's this? How's that? It's everyday conversation. Do we agree on everything? No, but that's why they're here. So if you guys got nothing else from this show, nothing else, when you get in your quiet place today, away from your religion, away from your political party, away from your homophobic hangups, away from all that blue light, all that bullshit, and you're in your quiet place, officers, that when you're laying down and take a nap, look up at that blank wall. Because that's the wall. I've seen it. I'm retired. I've seen it. in my dreams 1,000 times. That is that world where that vision of what I did here plays out. I see it. I lay down in my bed. I look up at that wall. It's a blank wall. And it's like a theater. Did I make a difference? Did I, not Waco PD, not my squad or my platoon or my friends, did I do what I was supposed to do? It's going to come. Those of you just starting out, trust me, 25, 30 years down the road, it's going to come. That's what this show was about. I didn't have a grandiose picture. I couldn't even think of what kind of picture would I even put up to advertise this show. The message is enough. Joe, can you go ahead, bro, final comments and take us out of here?
Well, final comment is everything that he says is what it is. One thing I want to talk about, John said, and we'll get right out of this. First of all, I want to thank Casey for wearing the Boston Police shirt. I thought they didn't notice. But John said something, and again, one of the greatest things in this country, at least one of the greatest attributes, is the idea that you have the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we can argue this at some other point, but the fact of the matter is, you only get on those juries if you're ready to vote. So don't get played by the system in more than one way. You may not choose to vote, but you may be ready to vote. Go sit on those juries. Listen to the story. You might stop somebody from going to jail that don't need to go to jail. You might stop somebody from hitting death row that don't need to be there. Are police being questioned now? Certainly. But with that, that's it for the day. And I'm talk to you later.
All right,
Sasha. Well said.
Appreciate everybody, you guys. Thank everybody. Waco, Texas, ATL, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Everybody tuned in, you know, putting up with me going through when I'm going through. And, you know, Izzy, appreciate you, bro. Chief, Joe, John, my little baby girl up there. I got to remind myself to call her Taylor because I want to keep calling her baby girl because I've known her. She's like my little daughter. So I see it that way. And yeah, I'm very defensive of her. But I appreciate everybody. You guys have a good evening. Good weekend. Please stay safe. Rona is real. Life is not a truck rally. So just be careful. And with that, we're going to get out.
Have a good weekend.
Peace. Enjoy your weekend.
Record.